Welcome to the latest installment in PRSA's Silver Anvil Awards podcast series. For more than 60 years, the Silver Anvil Awards have recognized the very best in public relations programs. Emblematic of the forging of public opinion, the Silver Anvil Award has become an iconic symbol of excellence and achievement in the public relations profession. The host of this year's series is PRSA member Deborah Radner. A highly respected public relations counselor and leader in the PRSA community, Deborah is accredited in public relations, a member of the PRSA College of Fellows, and a three-time Silver Anvil Award winner. She also has served as president of the Foundation of Women Executives in Public Relations and is a member of Women in Communications and Advertising Women of New York. And now, the host of the PRSA Silver Anvil Awards podcast series, Deborah Radman.
Welcome to the PRSA Silver Anvil podcast series. Today, we are speaking with the 2010 Best of Silver Anvil Award recipient, the U.S. Air Force Office of Public Affairs. And our guest this morning is Christy Nolte, Deputy Director of Air Force Public Affairs. Christy, welcome and congratulations on winning this award.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. We are both honored and surprised at being here with you guys. This is awesome. We're real happy.
I'm happy to hear that because you really should be. Winning a Silver Anvil is one of the highest achievements in the public relations practice. And winning the Best of Silver Anvil requires something extraordinary, and that means a program that did more than just work well or that delivered clever, creative, and great results. The Best of Silver Anvil is all about a program or an effort that touches lives and makes a huge difference in the process. And we'd love for you to share your program with us today in how you have address the issues around really giving families and Americans an opportunity to share in the difficult experience of honoring fallen heroes.
Well, thank you. This was, as you know, there had been an 18-year ban on media coverage, and this gave us an opportunity to. And when I say us, I mean really the whole of the Department of Defense, an opportunity to give America a solemn view of the dignified transfers, and we call them dignified transfers, and as opposed to a ceremony, because this is really just the beginning of their journey before they go home to their final resting place. But then, you know, it's where service members have been killed in combat and returned to American soil. In February of 2009, the Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, announced that this new policy allowing media to cover dignified transfers would again occur, but with the permission of families. And we didn't have a lot of lead time because we were expected to implement this policy in very short order, and in fact it implemented in the very first week of April of 2009. But we in Air Force Public Affairs were designated as the lead agency to develop a people-focused media program that honored the fallen and cared for their families, while simultaneously providing media the opportunity to cover this process in a solemn manner, and to provide transparency to, you know, what you know amounts to the human cost of war, which we take personally. So, you know, it started with, as I mentioned, the Secretary of Defense's policy, which put families front and center. And I think that really guided our effort at how we were going to put together a media access program at Dover Air Force Base.
You know, the whole lifting of the ban and the reinstitution of media coverage for dignified transfer has really got some historic significance for the military, but it's not without controversy. And as you began working on this effort, you faced some pretty big challenges, including balancing the high sensitivity of this change with the political implications and a tremendously high degree of public scrutiny. How did you think about those things, and how were you challenged to address those as you put your program together?
Well, I would go back to what the Secretary of Defense did for us, which was specifically say that that media would be allowed access with the permission of families, and that became our central sort of rallying cry. The brilliance of that was that it allowed it drew people to the fact that these are individuals that are coming home, individuals with a face and a name and families who are mourning for them, and it kept the focus on the individual fallen, as well as the fact that there is a family behind that fallen who are still in support of that person and the sacrifice that they made to serve their country and then to make the ultimate sacrifice. The controversy in the historically, it was transfer case after transfer case coming off of airplanes. Well, what this did was these are not nameless cases. These are individuals, and so a family would have to say, "Yes, I want media coverage there," and then we would put out an advisory that would specifically name that individual whose family has allowed for them to come and cover that dignified transfer. So, this kept the focus on this being about the brothers and sisters in arms who have made the ultimate sacrifice and the families that they've left behind. It allowed us to be people-centered, to maintain the honor, dignity, and respect of the fallen, and to provide care, service, and support to the families. You know, in keeping with our goals relative to the plan was to do just that, to provide families a dignified environment, to be present, and then to facilitate the transparency for the media, and then to provide, the media the appropriate access.
And, to get started and to really delve into this, not only knowing what you know, but also you did some research to help shape just internal opinion on the issue and what you were about to do. Talk about that, and also maybe some of the secondary research that helped put your thinking together.
Well, initial research that we used was an internal communication airman group survey, which basically is like our Nielsen families in the Air Force. While that only addressed Air Force individuals, it gave us a sense of where service members' heads probably were. And it was ahead of the policy actually being implemented. We knew that there was this change coming, and so we had an opportunity to kind of get a feel for that. And there was this very real concern about the dignity, honor, and respect piece. And would that be preserved once we started allowing media sort of what was perceived to possibly be unfettered access? And so that gave us a sense of, okay, this is what their concerns are. And then as we went through the process, we used veteran service groups. We contacted them through telephone surveys, giving them sort of a sense of here's kind of the direction we're headed. What do you think, and what are we missing, and that sort of thing. And so, and I got to go back to the fact that we were part of a larger team. Our focus as the Air Force was on the media access at Dover, but there was a larger working group that had all the services represented, and so they were a big part of helping focus this this message piece and the research part of this in particular. You know, working with us, we were all part of the same team.
yeah, and that's so important yet not easy to do.
Yeah, it really isn't. I mean, we had around the table. We had, of course, the service representatives from the legal community as well as from the mortuary community, and on the mortuary side in particular, those are some people that are very close to their mission, as you can well imagine. And so they were crucial, to helping us understand what we were about to take on and what the potential effects were. And I think probably the most important thing we did in these early days, and I think our research, the way we did our research is indicative of that, is listen. It was just listen. And take all of these inputs in and roll them into the how we were going to approach the logistics of allowing access at Dover.
You know, you had two other things that really kind of gave you some benchmarks, and I'm sure that many members of the whole team still remember and or maybe even experienced some of the anti-war sentiment and the challenges that occurred back in Vietnam. I know I was just in high school then, but I distinctly remember it. And also you had what you referred to in your entry as the Arlington National Cemetery model that demonstrated that media coverage can be consistently dignified and sensitive. Talk about that benchmarking a little bit and how
okay.
that helped the program developed.
On the Vietnam piece to begin with, I think that that became about that goes back to my comment before or my comments before about ensuring that this was not about numbers coming off of airplanes, that this was about individuals. And so that was a lesson learned, I would say, in watching how that played out, again, going back to the memo that the Secretary of Defense put out, that the families would be at the center of this. And when you made families the center of it, then the individuality of those transfer cases coming off of airplanes was restored. And so that from a from a benchmark standpoint was, I guess, a lesson learned.
Yeah,
it helped, it helped us to see the difference. On the Arlington Cemetery piece, we saw where they actually provided sort of the positive benchmark, where this was in fact about an individual fallen, because these are individual funerals that they're allowing media access to, and it confirmed that keeping families at the forefront of consideration was absolutely the right approach, and that again it preserved the individual's identity, and the sacrifice that they made for their country, and it showed us too how you can you can limit access in order to preserve dignity of the process without making it feel like you're limiting access, and it proved that media would be would respect the process. The Army is the executive agent there. It is the executive agent for Arlington Cemetery, and they do a really great job at Arlington, and so served as a tremendous benchmark. And in fact, they're executive agent for the mortuary process, and they were huge teammates as we went through the developing of the new policy. But I give a kudos to my Army brethren that they helped us, on that side of it, on how they handle Arlington National Cemetery. It was enormously helpful to us.
Yeah, that I can imagine. And as you then proceeded, you were perhaps maybe a little more confident that you could maintain a high degree of sensitivity with more media access. What
right.
You know, what really became most important as you began to plan the outreach and the media viewing area you established? Can you take us through that a little bit, how it worked and how a reporter would participate or interface with the family?
Sure. Let's see. That became developing sort of orchestration of the logistics surrounding an actual dignified transfer where media access has been allowed was an interesting challenge because, you know, it got right down to the details of how the airplane should be parked so that when the doors open, if there were multiple transfer cases in a particular airplane, but only, you know, half or less of those or however many of those had allowed media access to their particular loved one's dignified transfer. So how do you position the airplane so that media, where they're positioned, couldn't view all of the transfer cases? And then, and so there was a plan for every aircraft, for front loading, for side loading, from shielding, you know, from a standpoint of how did we shield the families from the media if they wanted to be shielded, and then, but still allowing the media to have a good, you know, a good angle of for their shot. And I'll tell you, it was amazing. The media were really amazing. They were supremely respectful of the process. And even police themselves within their groups, when they saw somebody sort of diverting from, you know, sort of the rules of engagement, you know, cameras must be pointed in this direction, kind of thing. It was gratifying to see because, you know, I just think we kept them, you know, because even and I neglected to mention this because even as we were going through asking the families and airmen and as we were polling the other services for what their service members thought about how we were proceeding with the policy development, we were also talking to the media and we were asking them what they thought as we proceeded through the policy development. And of course, their big concern is, you know, they're concerned about having unfettered access and, you know, their right to, you know, freedom of the press and whatnot. But at the same time, there was this recognition that absolutely honor, dignity, and respect needed to be preserved for the fallen, and that care and support and service to the family was unquestionable. And so when we explained to them that we're doing it this way because it helps the family in this way, there was no question. I mean, it was almost like it, you know, maybe it's unpatriotic even to be counter to that. So, yeah, we sent our best team of PAs up to Dover to kind of walk through the, you know, how we were going to handle flight line operations, you know, how we would drive families and where we would park the Surreys that carried them and where we would place media depending on how the airplane was parked and all of that. So we had and ultimately came up with written plans on how we would handle each situation depending on the kind of airplane that was bringing in the fallen.
And you've got a process now that you can pretty much apply and repeat with significant ways to adjust for the individual circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thank you for saying that because, yeah, we – in a very short time, we had to create a fail-safe, because this is a no-fail mission. I mean, you get it wrong, and it can have national implications. And a repeatable program balanced with all the unique priorities, you know, both political, emotional, and so forth. And then, you know, again, I can't emphasize enough, ensuring the dignity, honor, and respect for the fallen in care and service and support for families. And, you know, of course, you know, this is all in keeping with the administration's desire to carry out a pledge of transparency, you know, that there's no mystery behind this. It's just that, and I go back to sort of the brilliance of the policy, of the direction from the Secretary of Defense, that, you know, you put families at the forefront here, and then you preserve the dignity of that individual who gave everything for his or her country.
The ultimate
right.
Sacrifice. You know, and you continue on to have deal with this more frequently than any of us would like, and as you proceed to go through and process through each dignified transfer situation, you do get a lot of feedback as you go in order to keep shaping your efforts. You talk to families, you do a fairly in-depth content analysis of all the media that results from each and every engagement, and you know, you go back to your constituencies who are involved in this each and every time to get some what I would imagine be really valuable input, so that you can keep a finger on the temperature or on the pulse of things that you might have to deal with going forward.
Right.
What kind of tools do you guys use to measure? Do you have any specific tools that you are using? Did you create some of your own media analysis tools? Talk to us just for a minute about that and give us a little insight. We're always looking, everybody's in our business is always looking for a better way to understand the outcome of our efforts.
Well, yeah, the we had stood up, the outreach to the veterans groups happened before as well as after the policy was implemented. And we have not reached out to them since then. It's time to do that again. The other thing that we did was, as I mentioned, our internal communication assessment group, which is an airman. It's an all airman. It's an Air Force group, and as I mentioned, they're like our Nielsen families. And we had had that was not stood up specifically for this. We have had that stood up for several years, but we are due to send out in the next 4 to 6 weeks another survey to them asking about this specific issue, and then we. You know, we rely on, there's not as formal a feedback loop with the other services other than the media assessment piece of it. And on the media assessment side of it, I mean, we have an assessments branch within our strategic plans division that helps us with that. And what we look for in that research is, did we achieve the effect we were trying to achieve, which was basically going back to dignity, honor, respect for the fallen, care, service, and support for families. And I mean, I say that over and over again, but they really were our foundation. So. Did we capture that? And it's less about the numbers of stories and more about the content of those stories. And do those stories capture that? And what we have found is that that we have had great success in that. And so more on a more routine basis, we're watching it from a media, because frankly, I mean, this is about media access to Dover. So how is the media treating this? And so far, so good.
So far, so good, and able to bring the story more to the American public to better understand what's happening in this war, and also to hopefully continue to fuel the gratitude that we all feel for the people, the men and women in the service who do what they do so we can live the way that we live.
Yeah.
It's just amazing. And Christy, I want to thank you very much for being with us today. This is a well-deserved award, and I want to thank everybody who's listening for joining us today for the Silver Anvil Award podcast series. Congratulations again, Christy. This series will be up on the Voices of Public Relations at PRA.org, and this this particular interview is a must listen. Thanks, everyone.
This podcast has been a production of the Public Relations Society of America. Visit PRSA.org for more information about the Silver Anvil Awards program and podcast series. This recording cannot be duplicated without explicit permission from PRSA.